Got a bad bitch on me.
What?
Got a bad bitch on me.
She
D T F.
She tell me she
D T F.
I heard she
D T F.
What?
And you ain't hanging with the team if you ain't down to fuck.
Okay. Well, Lord, I'm a bad.
Welcome to DTF, the Daryl Timmery Fun Hour, the universe's greatest sex education comedy, sometimes game show, currently just a podcast. Hi, I'm your resident sexuality educator, Dr. Timmery.
And I'm Daryl Charles, talking to you from one of the two rooms I'm allowed to be in my home. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to tell the nice people why you are...
Oh, of course not. No, your boy got COVID. I was out in these streets.
You did it. Finally.
I did it. Finally. You know, I was tired of having to lie to my friends about how I actually did get COVID, but it was from somebody that they don't know because I go to a different school. you don't know them. You don't know them.
Yeah.
But they exist.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But I got COVID. You know, it happens. But, you know, your boy was properly boosted in addition to being vaccinated. And so right now it's just a little bit more snot.
No. Wow.
Hopefully you can't tell at home.
Snot's just another lube.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't say it a lot on here because... we try to be correct, and, you know, spit is not lube. And while it has a lot of uses, there are better things to use.
I mean, there are better things to use, but it's not lube. Like, I'm very big on spit is better than not having anything. And, like, there's...
True.
There's, like, you know, the body safe materials that are going to be considering if you have a, you know, latex or a silicone toy, you know, like you're going to take into consideration, you know, we don't want to be mixing silicone lubes with silicone toys. We don't want to have oil-based lubes with anything that's latex, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But like, if you find yourself in a situation where you can't find a bottle of like proper lube, fucking get
a little
coconut oil. I don't give a shit. Spit on your hand. Like, that's better than nothing. That's better than nothing.
Okay. Well, a little dab do you. Cool. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I am completely okay with telling people to do things that I don't do in my normal life. and one of those would be, don't use spit. Don't use spit. Ugh. But yeah, I mean, you know, I figure it comes from your body. It's biodegradable, right? Whatever.
Yeah. I mean...
it's a little funky if you catch yourself on the wrong part of the day. Spit can have its own smell. It's
yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah. I mean, human
not
mouths,
the best.
Gross. You know? They just are.
Right.
As a fact.
Right. Exactly. That's
as
the
a
thing.
Fact. Yeah.
It's an orifice. The most open orifice to, I guess, nostrils?
Nostrils are pretty open.
Pretty open.
Yeah.
And they don't close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nostrils.
They do have
the
those little
one.
Brooms to catch stuff, though. That's what we have our nose hairs for.
Mm-hmm.
I just got my teeth to catch all of the sugar that I eat. And then I get to go to the
yeah.
dentist and give him.
And that's the thing we're supposed to keep away.
Yeah.
You're supposed to keep that sugar away from your
yeah.
teeth.
I do floss.
Especially overnight, says
yeah.
the person who eats Jolly Ranchers as they fall asleep.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Your
the
teeth
worst.
Are just going to
But guess
melt.
What? I was at the dentist. Your boy's teeth got an A+.
Wow.
Okay. Like a B, because
okay.
I didn't have anything wrong with my teeth, but I have before.
Okay.
The thing is, dental hygiene, we out here.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like I have fantastic dental hygiene. Like, my dentist has credited me with like my flossing and my brushing are fantastic. The gums are in great shape, blah, 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 blah. Does not matter. I have spent so many tens of thousands of dollars
yeah.
on tooth fixing and repair because a lot of that shit's just straight up genetic and you can't do
mm-hmm.
anything about it. I mean, you could do stuff to make it better, but like you can't change your genetics. And like, I also know a friend who not only is like genetically inclined towards teeth problems, but she has lost a full ass tooth for every child that she had because of the way that it sucks
Ooh.
Calcium out of your body. So yeah, I mean, you can, you know, do your best, but like a lot of it's just
whoa,
genetic.
Whoa, hold on. Sorry, gotta hit the brakes.
Okay.
So I get it. The children steal your bones.
Yeah.
They leech the bone, the calcium out of your bones in order to create their own.
Yep.
Why does anybody have children?
That's a great
question. But to lose a tooth, like, did it get reabsorbed?
No, not like that. It's just that, so for one thing, I've heard from multiple people who've had kids and people with some dental experience professionally that your dentist can often tell that you are pregnant before you're visibly showing because of the deterioration in the teeth. And in the case of this particular friend that I'm talking about, it's not that it, like, disappeared. It's that it, like, degraded to the point it had to be removed.
Oh, so, yeah, so, like, the... it's literally leeching.
Yeah, like if you have
calcium,
if you have a tooth that already had like a, you know, a root canal and a crown and all of that, and then that gets fucked up some way, like that gets broken from the inside, like you can't fix it anymore, you just gotta go, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know the specific like diagnostic label of it, but some teeth cannot be fixed anymore because there's nothing on the inside, you know, and they'll just break. So
this conversation has me licking the inside of my mouth.
So everybody just remember to floss before you go to bed, brush your teeth twice a day, and if you are about to get pregnant or you currently are pregnant, like pump up your calcium intake. That's all I can say about that.
Prenatal vitamins, baby. You know, science can help. And I is that the other subtitle of the show?
Yeah. Science can help.
The greatest sex education comedy game show in the known universe. Also, science can help.
It can. Right? We're recording an episode while you have COVID because science can help. That is a testament to the vaccine.
Very true. The vaccine is why I'm chilling. I mean, the worst it got, and it did get bad, but like the worst it got was like I was tired and my sinuses were like super clogged. Where like even using like a neti pot, like I had to apply some pressure to get it all the way up and out of my body, the salt water that I shoved into my face.
Nice. That's
good times.
That's a vivid image.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
It's nothing like waterboarding yourself for health.
I think this discussion of noses is a fantastic way to segue to our first piece of fucking news.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's go to our first regular segment. We have a lot of pieces in this category today. So welcome to fucking news. This first bit is just a fun bit of science. We do love a science around here. This is an article in neurosciencenews.com. It came out in November of 2021. But basically the idea is that hexadecanol, which is a molecule excreted by humans, found in abundance on the scalps of babies, sparks behavioral changes in adults who are exposed to it. And there are apparently gender differences. We're going to be speaking in the binary because that's the way that they did this, but we're not saying we're like, yeah, binary. But anyway, in women, the molecule decreases connectivity in the parts of the brain associated with social decision making, but increases connectivity in males. And that has behavioral ramifications. So it sort of decreases aggression in men, but stimulates aggression in women. So I guess cute aggression is real in this case.
For the ladies, apparently. I mean, you know, it's funny. I guess well, it's not even weird to say it. I've smelled a baby before.
Oh, yeah.
It's what you do with them.
Yeah.
There's not much more you can do. With a baby, you change it, feed it, smell it. You can smell it. And I've smelled a few babies in my day. I feel like I was hanging out with a baby on New Year's Day. I didn't smell him, though. But he wasn't an infant. I think that was what it was.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird to smell infants. A toddler.
Yeah, like, he was a small toddler. So, yeah, I didn't, like, sniff him. He was giving me five and stuff.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. And he liked jumping on my lap. So yeah, it wasn't that. I got my fill of the cute hormone or whatever.
The cute hormone.
The cute hormone. I got my fill of like a connection to humanity that only a baby can give you from having a boy jump on my lap. No Epstein.
Yeah.
But shouldn't even brought him up.
Yeah.
But Yeah, so I didn't have to smell the baby, but I get it. You know, I've hung around babies, and you smell them, and they smell great. And I don't know if, like, I felt a calm. But next time I smell a baby, I'm gonna, you know, take my pulse before and after.
Yeah, I mean, so to go into, like, the specifics of how they did this, and we are reading this in Neuroscience News, but it was originally published, the study was in Science Advances, and... Mm. The molecule, basically, because it's changing our social connectivity parts of our brains, I guess it sort of speaks to the ways in which gender and our social expectations are connected, right? So this kind of reminds me of the way that toxoplasmosis affects men and women differently. So this is sort of a change of topics, but Toxoplasma gondii, which is a parasite that is often found in, like, cat poop and then can be transmitted to humans and can affect the brain. And it's, like, another reason, like, that pregnant people shouldn't clean litter boxes is it's just, you know, the impacts on fetal development. But the way that it affects humans behaviorally, if you have toxoplasmosis, is different based on gender. And according to things that I've read, among men, it makes them a little bit more gentle, and, like, among women, it makes them a little bit more, like, feral, and it's sort of been described as, like, the Catwoman effect, right? Like, so she turns into Selena Kyle, you know, Catwoman, and it just kind of reminded me of that. So it's, like, the physiological instincts that humans have had are often directly related to the things that allowed us to, A, fuck, B, get pregnant, C, keep those kids alive long enough that our genes stayed around, right? A lot of our instincts are for that. And so, like, we have to do what it takes to, like, take care of a tiny stupid thing that cannot take care of itself for a really long time.
And is a monster. Like, I mean, just everything will be okay, and then nothing is all right, and nobody can rest until you figure out what is wrong with me, and the only help I'm gonna give you is screaming in your face.
Yeah.
The worst. Oh, is it 3 o'clock in the morning? Guess what? I don't know what time means. Handle me.
I'm gonna just keep doing 90 degree pivots and not discussing this article because of things that it reminds me of. But somebody the other day, a mutual of mine on Twitter, posted a thread that was all, you know, there's lots of things to complain about being a parent, but what are some of the nice things? What are the things that you love? And I'd never seen anything like that. And it was just full of parents who were saying, like, you know, the stuff that is really difficult to describe, right? Because it's really easy to complain about the lack of sleep and the noise, and it's costly, and they're a pain in the ass, and, like, they ruin all your stuff and your body and your blah, 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 and your marriage. But it's really hard to describe the, like, sense of purpose and wonder, and it's really difficult to articulate what it's just like to hang out with this tiny cool person who just does funny shit. Like, and it was really charming because I think as a non-parent, I've never had any sort of instinct towards baby fever, right? And I just read an article this week about what is baby fever, but not everybody has it. And so when I just read things about being a parent, it just looks like work. It just looks awfully difficult and expensive.
Yeah.
And so it was nice to hear, what is it that people are getting out of this?
I mean, I've seen you fall completely to pieces around kittens.
Oh yeah, but that's a totally different level of responsibility.
oh, it's a totally different level of responsibility, but I think it's a similar thing. It's just, you see a baby, it's like, hey, it's a baby. Like, I don't have to do, like, there's like, all of my cognitive things can stop when I'm dealing with a baby. They're a baby. It's like, a lot of people say that I'm good with kids, and it's because when I was a teenager, that was when my aunts decided to just start knocking them out. Like, you know, how families work. When it was time for me to be born, my aunts, two other aunts had a child. And then they waited, I don't know, 6 or 7 years to just start throwing them out every 6 months. Like, I don't understand it. But they just started just delivering children. And So as a teenager, I've changed a lot of diapers. I hung out with a lot of babies, and people are like, oh, you're good with babies. And it's like, babies are easy because you don't have to explain shit to them. You just got to move fast to make a noise. Like, it's so easy to just relate to a baby. Now, taking care of it, feeding it, making sure it's, you know, has the right amount of vitamin A. Yeah, that's different. But, you know, it's just very easy to connect with a baby because they're just an input vessel. They just take in everything. So all you got to do is make a stupid mouth noise and they're going to be like, this shit is amazing. Dude, can you please do that again? That's amazing. What did you do? That's one more time, please. Wow. You know what? I'm going to try it. And then, oh my God, I can't believe I just, and then so you have 5 minutes of entertainment. That is just good for you and the baby.
See, that, yeah, that is a joyful description because everything I've ever heard about child stuff is always the responsibility part of it. And I think that that is inextricably tied to it for me. I see a child and I think, like, don't break it. everyone protect it. Everyone has to, you know, arrange their lives so that this thing will survive.
This is the benefit of being an uncle that doesn't live in the same city or state as any of your nieces or nephews. Which, you know, now I got a little baby niece, and she's in school, she's not a baby, but still, like, I feel a little like, oh man, I want to hang out with my niece. But you know what I've never had to do? Change a diaper.
Nice. Never?
Well, no, with this niece.
Oh, okay. It was like, you have managed to escape it this whole time?
No. You know what's crazy, though? I've noticed that since, I think it was college, like, once I went to college and came back, nobody in my family has ever asked me to change a diaper. Like, people have had babies. Huh. I've hung around infants. I've had them for days. And they'd be like, oh, I think this baby pooped. Where's your diaper bag? Oh, don't worry about it. And they just snatched the baby away from me and then abscond off to a room to change it. And I'm like, I know how to do this, but there's a part of me that's like, hey, hold on. I'm not some kind of a monster. I know how to change a baby. But then also it's like, Daryl, shut up. Shut up. They're not asked. They just don't want you dealing with baby shit right now.
Yeah. That's not the cute end.
That's what they don't want.
Yeah.
Relax. Watch TV.
Yeah.
Have a beverage.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I had no kids.
Yeah.
But, you know, smell them.
Yeah.
In fact, how about we, well, you want to talk about a 90-degree pivot. Was it Governor Larry Hogan? Wonderful, terrible man. Just reauthorized a bunch of money as part of his refund the police initiative. Put a bunch of, yeah, I mean, just a slap in the face to everything that's happened in the past 2 years. But anyway, or 4 years or 400 years. Either way, the thing is, how about we just get some of this hex chemical and put it in little mace canisters for police to spray at angry men? And, you know, like, see how that would work. Like, I don't think that this study is showing that it's that radical of change. That's some science fiction right there. But I think, even if I was upset to the point where the police had to be called, somebody sprays something in my face, like, is that a baby? That moment of recognition of the smell is probably enough to keep me alive.
Yeah.
If their procedure was to spray me with baby before they fucking pulled out a gun.
Yeah, no, but I like that idea. Know. I want to watch the movie that's based on this premise. Very much so. But yeah. So specifically in this study, like, they're focusing on this molecule shortly called hex. And most mammals can sense it, but it's not necessarily perceptible. It's not like you always know that you're being impacted by it, but it does affect behavior. So in this particular study, they use a couple different validated scientific methods for gauging aggression. And they used 130 human participants. Half of them were exposed to hex, half to a control substance. And then they used these methods.
A substance that acted as a control, not a controlled substance. The other half, they was on that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Got a little bit of the goof juice in them.
Huh? Half of them are just like on scissor. Yeah. So they have this provocation stage where they're trying to frustrate people and a response stage to gauge their aggression. And they have like a whole computer game to measure their aggressive behavior. And
that's called XCOM 2. That's the game. It's XCOM 2. If you ever want to just get frustrated real fast, go play XCOM 2 for 10 minutes. Anyway, please.
Or that fucking, that bomb game we tried to play.
Ooh,
in Jackbox.
Ooh, bomb core. Yo, I can't get nobody else. So anyway, Timmy's my friend forever because he's the only person who tried to play bomb core with me.
I'll play it with you, yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. But like, you know, when you can do that or Quiplash, people are like, no, I just want to say dirty things. It's like, how about we just work together to not die? Anybody? Nobody wants to? Too much stress? All right, let's go back to drinking.
I mean, it's a very specific type of work, and I understand not everybody wanting to have that particular thing while you're just trying to play. But yeah, I enjoyed it. But anyway, yada yada, game followed by a second game, which allowed humans to punish someone with a radio, with an audio blast, and like that was their metric for gauging aggressiveness, is like blasting somebody really loudly. So basically, the ones that were exposed to Hex exhibited different behaviors, and it was sort of gendered in the responses. So it made women more aggressive, and it made men less aggressive if they had been exposed to Hex before they did all of this. And so that is not necessarily the same thing as like real world stuff, but you know, still a pretty good indicator of some kind of correlation. So definitely something worth continuing to pursue studying.
Yeah, and that's the way science works, folks. You rarely get this big super blockbuster answer. You get a little answer, and then you put in a lot more time and you do a brand new experiment that says if this then maybe this, and then you keep building. And so you know,
just until you run out of money, and then you're
until
like,
you
well.
Run out of money or interest. Right. Yeah. and so then you end up corrupting science because scientists have to go find money in order to get the things done, and that means that they got to deal with people who've been building wealth based on power structures that make sure that certain things happen and other things don't. Mm-hmm. Anyway, science is great. You should, fund it however you can. You know, if you have kids, teach them that science is cool. How about that? Or something. I don't know. I turned off the internet in my house after stumbling upon a thread on Twitter that somebody had made of the urine therapy groups Facebook. And so I was triggered. Not because I have any weird pee things. I mean, I've been peed on. I peed on people. That's fun. If you haven't tried that once, then come on. It's 2022.
Just lay down a shower curtain first, or do it in the shower if you're scared.
Do it in a shower. Do it in a tub. Just do it. Like, why not? You're doing weird stuff with the bits to do things. But anyway, these people were talking very seriously in very bad science terms about the benefits of drinking your own urine. And or using it to rubbing it into the skin. It was a lot of things.
I mean, I feel like so many of these groups is just like somebody just keeps like punking them because they keep taking awful things. It's like none of the treatments, you know, there was like the stuff that's in like a fish cleaner, like the hydrochloric whatever. You know, that's other people's like lupus medication, the fucking ivermectin, you know, there was like Windex for a while, like just a bunch of stuff, and it's like none of these are like eat a bunch of burritos.
Yeah, take some light and figure out a way to put it in the body. I have had too much of a respect for math and science in my life, in my former lives, to not be disheartened by a group of 10,000 accounts.
That's
and
a lot.
You know, 10,000 accounts might be 30 people. It's very easy to create a bunch of accounts if you know what you're doing. But still, it just, oof, I was triggered. Let's move on.
Yeah. Speaking
smell
of
your babies.
Being triggered, that is a fantastic way to take us to our next piece of fucking news. Mm-hmm. Well done there, Daryl. But yeah.
You know, it's a job. I have to make it look like I'm not working.
So this is a thing we have talked about on the show before. We had been doing DTF for probably 6 years before we suddenly realized in the midst of a discussion on, I think it was incest, that we don't give a trigger warning at the top of the show. That's a great
point. You know what's funny, though? I think we have been asked of us before. Mm-hmm. Not like someone said, hey, you did this thing and I didn't like it, but venues that we have performed in were like, should we have some kind of a content or trigger warning for the show? And we've always been like, no, because we take care of that in the show, right? Like, when we know something is going too far or whatever. But I do remember the incest conversation because I had a lot of jokes in there, partially because the way my brain works is to take testy shit or shit that makes you feel weird and make a joke out of it. But yeah, as we were giving the presentation and as we were thinking, I was just like looking in the crowd and just seeing some people just be like, ooh. I was like, oh, well, not everybody's taking the lighthearted approach that I took when I did all this research and and came up with 10 fun facts you should know.
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing is then you and I had a discussion on like, what should we do something in like the top of every show? And I've had other shows when we did Agitated, it was all political. So there's a very likely, there's a high probability that something will come up during the course of the show that is going to be like, for lack of a better word, just like triggering. Mm-hmm. And the way that we've approached it in Burlesque, in, I think in ZZF, is just to basically start at the top of the show when we're doing it in person and just say like, have fun and take care of yourself, and if you need to step over to the bar and you need to like grab a drink or you want to step out, you know, sides a smoke or go to the bathroom, whatever, like do it, man. Like, just take care of yourself, like whatever your need is. If you need to pee or if you need to just not be in the room while this is being discussed, like, by all means. Because I feel like putting trigger warnings before a specific thing and not everything sort of implies that some things are valid to be upset by and other things mm-hmm. aren't, right? And you just never know. And so the point of what we're about to talk about is, this is a blog post from Margaret Middleton, and it's just about how to do content warnings at museums, and I found it just phenomenally well done. And even though it's very specific to museums, I think that it is applicable a lot more broadly, and it can be used at shows or any number of places where you're curating an experience for people.
Yeah. And you want to be accommodating and inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really the thing, right? Is if you give a shit.
Right.
So she talks about when to use a warning and prioritizing the experiences of the people who are marginalized and experiencing like oppression, right? So like, if there's going to be photos of lynchings, we're going to be concerned more about the experiences of like your Black visitors than like the sensibilities of your white visitors. Because like, if white people get offended by the content warning, then fuck those people. What you need to do is just make sure that the people who are actually impacted by whatever it is have a chance to opt in or opt out. And so being really clear on what the content's going to be, like, instead of saying like, some people might find this upsetting, instead being like, this exhibit's going to talk about death. This exhibit's going to talk about sexual assault. This exhibit is going to talk about like drug use or whatever. Just like telling people directly and then giving them a way to opt out. Like, if you don't want to go through this gallery, head to the left. You know, if you want to go through, it's this way. Give a description of what's going to be in there. Don't make assumptions about who's there. Don't label them. Don't talk about like kids versus adults.
You're right.
You know, just like state what it is and how to be a part of it or not. Don't call people like sensitive viewers, you know, just like, yeah, just like help people understand what it is and make their own decision.
Yeah, they break it down to three things. Give a detailed description of what to expect in the gallery. Avoid making assumptions about who the content is or is not for. And offer alternative routes should they wish to avoid this particular content. And yeah, it's pretty simple. But it does make sense where it's like, yeah, this is exactly what's going to be seen here. If you want to learn more, you should go into the exhibit, because we really, you know, we provide the nuance, we provide the things to the proper reference, and we give the respect to the material. But if it's going to bother you that we are going to show an image of a dead body for whatever reason, you should know that there's going to be a dead body shown. Mm. And that's it. And you know, that it gives agency to the most vulnerable in the crowd, right? It gives agency to the person who didn't expect this to happen, or, you know. Yeah, I think it's really cool.
Yeah, and I think that it's like a pretty practical and easy way to help people have an experience, because like I personally have just like an itchy reaction when people make like requirements for like content warnings when you're posting in groups if you're going to talk about it, whatever, because like again, mm-hmm. like you never know what is going to be upsetting to somebody, right? And it's like we're just picking the most popular things, like mm-hmm. the things like, you know, like the content warning, this is about dieting, or content warning, this is about like sexual assault, because those things are real. But like for someone who's experienced real world trauma, like the things that can bring that back aren't always overt discussions of it. Sometimes it can be like a song, a smell, you know, mm-hmm. like we never know. And so I think that it's, yeah, I think it's just really helpful to be clear when it's going to be overt, because like so many movies, instead of like knowing how to tell stories well, will just like use rape as a plot line to explain this guy is bad, right?
Oh my god. Yeah, it's the absolute worst. Yeah, it's what they call it, fridging.
Oh, that, yeah, when they just like kill the protagonist lady.
Yeah, you kill the sex interest of your protagonist in order to facilitate the motive for justice. Mm-hmm. Or if the protagonist happens to be a woman, you take their child away. Mm. You know, or if you're Liam Neeson, you take their child away. But you have to threaten that child with a life of sexual servitude. Mm-hmm. In order to make him use his very special set of skills. Yeah, I think it is very silly that like that is the thing. And oh, what I was gonna say was, I May Destroy You.
Oh man,
a very good television show. I think there's only gonna be one season of it. I don't really see how you would do a second season, unless you did like Brand New People in a Brand New Situation. But still, anyway, it was very well done. Shout out to Michaela Cole. Is on HBO if you want to see it. But it is heavy. Like every single episode is heavy. There's a lot of comedy in it. There's a lot of drama in it, but it's very heavy. But there was rarely a trigger warning on that show. I think it was like one or two episodes, I think, that like really decided to post something like, hey, you should, you know, because we very aggressively deal with it. With a very specific thing. In fact, I think it's the, I don't want to spoil anything, but like spoiler alert, when she, that end the episode where she like walks into the ocean, right at the end, it was like, hey, suicide hotline, blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah. And it was just funny, because I was just like, yeah, I guess. I mean, it was metaphorical in what was happening, right? Like the way that the episode ended, it was like, she didn't just really walk into the ocean, did she? But, you know, that whole time she was like, spiraling about what had happened and the lack of agency she was having in her own life and blah blah blah. And so then they decided to put that warning.
It's so interesting. Yeah, I watched this show that had, I think it was like Kate Mara or something, and I don't know why, it was just trash soap opera-y sort of plot that I got caught up in, but it's basically about a young high school teacher who has an affair with a student. And the episode, every single episode is just spent salivating over the sexuality here, right? Mm-hmm. And we are clearly here for the drama and the juiciness and this very attractive young actor who's actually in his 20s, you know? And like, we're just like, we're here for the salacious bits. And then the end, because like they've spent this whole time profiting off of a story about, you know, child exploitation,
sexy young teens. Yeah.
Yeah. If you are experiencing, you know, that sort of thing, if you're a kid that's watching this, here's a phone number to call. And it's like,
Don't know if that's what, you know, but I mean, it is good that we've come that far. Cause I could imagine something like this happening in the 80s and they'd just be like, well, I mean, whatever. Look, he was at the movies, baby. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, do some more cocaine. You'll feel better.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just wanted to give credit to this very cool article. And I think that a number of industries, you know, can be in integrating this into the way that they have their experiences for their clients. So
definitely,
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to the MPAA, right? Like when they now when they give when they give like a R rating or something, they don't just say it's R. They will say contains these things, which is just a little more information, allowing the audience to make a more educated decision.
Yeah. I think it would be good if instead of having the rating, they just included those things, right? Because it's problematic the way that the rating system actually works out. The way that it actually happens is that, like, cartoonish violence is fine. You know, realistic violence where consequences are shown is more censored. But all of that is fine compared to sex, especially female pleasure. You know, we've got like a million examples of movies where if it was a not consensual situation, it was rated less harshly than if it was pleasurable. Like, for instance, like Sucker Punch got a lower rating by making a consensual situation look coercive. There was that Blue Valentine film Ryan Gosling was in where they got an NC-17 for a scene where it's implied he's like going down on Michelle Williams until like they raised holy hell about it because they're like, how many sex scenes have been in movies and didn't get an NC-17, and it's literally just because he's going down on a woman? Like,
oh yeah,
how
it was
many
the same
times?
Thing in like Boys Don't Cry, I think it was like a scene where like Hilary Swank female... like orgasmed on you know, that was what it's supposed to be, where this woman had an orgasm from sex, and they were like, nah dog, that's nasty.
Yeah, like, and the Chloe Sevigny experiencing pleasure had to be edited down, but there was like sexual assault scenes later in that same movie that were not having
that
to take out.
Never. Yeah.
And, so like, and the MPAA is a problem. I think that the point that you're making is that, like, state the content. What is the actual problem? R means nothing. If it's just because you say the word fuck a bunch of times and you tell the aristocrats joke over and over again, like, that's a very different thing.
Actually, you know, list it. Now, you know, just like with many things, right? I encourage every member of every audience to do some serious introspection on what in our culture says, what it says about our culture, that it's better that you can get a PG-13 with a rape scene, but you can't get a PG-13 with a woman being like, I masturbate, it's great. Like, like, you know, the cultural implications, right? Be critical in that. But, you know, like I was saying, it's nice that they added that thing. And I think they added that with TV first, and then it started getting into movies, where they were just like, these specific things happen. And it's probably because of fucking NYPD Blue and like Cop Rock and shit.
So many butts.
Yeah, they were like, hey, you're gonna see, what the fuck is his name? Jimmy Smits's butt.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Smits's butt after this commercial break, so you should know that. Ready? Go. Oh, he's getting out of bed. There's his butt. That was the entire thing. But, you know. But, yeah.
You know,
give
one
people
of my,
the tools.
One of my familial claims to fame, I am not related to a lot of famous people, literally only one, but I am like... several
Kimmy Schmidt.
I'm related to a fictional character. So there is an actress from like her heyday was like the 20s and 30s, Maureen O'Sullivan, an Irish actress. She was in the original like Tarzan movies, and she is like my third cousin or some amount that means I'll never meet her, right? And she's the mother of Mia Farrow, which again means I will never meet her, but we're related, which means I extra hate Woody Allen. But Maureen O'Sullivan in those original Tarzan movies is like just swimming around in the water naked, like, and that again is how you can tell we're related. But because of those films, that was part of the reason that like the Hays Code was introduced, which was that long list of things that will be banned in movies, including like interracial romance and smoking dope and criminality. Hey. Like, everything that is now the basic plot of anything. But the Hays Code was supposed to censor everything, and then the MPAA was sort of like their solution to the censorship, where it's like, we're gonna give it ratings, so we can put in our dope smoking and our criminality.
Well, and they needed to get, you know, these were also like the well, this is before like McCarthy and stuff, but like, you know, the culture was very sex negative and racist. and so, you know, it was very easy. It was easier to offend back then. And I swear to God, I know there's so many people like, oh, it's so easy to offend now. It's like, you don't get the fuck out of my face.
It sort of depends, though. That's the funny thing is, like, if you want to go find saucy content from the 1920s, it is not difficult because, like, the first usage of video and just, like, photography in general, like, a lot of porn. There's a lot of porn.
Most of it was porn.
Yeah, there's real saucy audio recordings from, like, if you can find music that was actually recorded in the 1920s, 1930s, that shit is all about drinking and fucking. Yeah, we have this very very specific sense of their sensibilities, and it was like this very mainstream middle class white idea, but like that's not, you know, like it wasn't everybody.
It was about, again, the content warnings and stuff. It's not so much like, oh, this is wrong or bad. It's what does it challenge? And when you look at what got the most backlash from being challenged, it was usually things that undermined what the people in power thought were the things keeping everybody doing what was expected of them.
I think we are ready for our next piece of fucking news. So next piece of fucking news. This one's fun. Everything about this is fun.
Wait till we start talking about it, though.
Oh, yeah. We're going to definitely still ruin the mood if we just do that. So basically, this is a thing that you might see in, from a number of publications. But basically, apparently, there was a new research from biologists that found clear anatomical evidence that female dolphins have a fully functional clitoris that helps them experience pleasure during sex, just like it does for humans, which is lovely because a clitoris is a rare example of a body part that serves only the function of sexual pleasure. It does nothing else. It's not how you pee. It's not necessary for reproduction. It's just sexual pleasure. Yep. And so, good for her.
Very, very happy for the scientists at Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts.
Yes, they've been studying the evolution of genitals in all sorts of vertebrate animals.
Yeah. And so, yeah, dolphins are marine mammals. That means that they are mammals who give birth in the water. And what is it to be a mammal? Live births and
I think like fuzz, like hair. Yeah.
And milk. And I think body hair is a thing. But like dolphins, obviously their hair would be real fine if they have any.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's not like our hair. It's some kind of...
It'd be really fine. But like, the things that make a mammal are having a live person fall out of you and creating milk for that live thing. Mammaries.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, mammalian.
Apparently, the dolphin clitoris is relatively large and filled with plenty of erectile tissue and blood vessels that allow it to engorge. And
they got that hyena clit.
Yeah, well, not that necessarily that big, but surrounded by a band of connective tissue that helps keep its shape, which apparently indicates that it's a valuable body part. And perhaps most importantly, the dolphin clitoris is chock full of nerve endings right underneath relatively thin skin, along with other sensory receptors, which indicate that it's about pleasure.
Yep, it is about pleasure. And it's widely thought, this is a direct quote, that these dolphins also use sex as a social lubricant. So it is for pleasure. It's not always just to have kids. Sometimes it's just to be like, are you having a bad day? Come here for a second. All right, just want to let you know I love you. All right. it's an extended hug.
They're one of the species that seems to have sex for reasons outside of reproduction and like dominance. So they engage in foreplay. They have, you know, clearly like fun times besides the just strict active penetration. They masturbate and you know, they'll get it on regardless of gender. There's examples of like female dolphins rubbing each other's clits with using their snouts and flippers.
Hey, so, now. All right.
Yeah.
A little dolphin linguist me out here.
Good for them. Yeah. I'm happy.
Dolphlatio,
huh? Yeah.
Hey, look, I can put dolphin on anything. Dolphins also rape. All right. Had to put that out there. Sorry. Yeah. It's another thing that they do.
Yeah.
Not just dolphins.
Yeah.
They will attack anything on flippers.
And people.
People have been. They got caught in the wrong pod, and them dolphins like, "Yo, where you from, yo? You know where you at? You know where you at? You lost? You all right? Where your grandmama stay? Yo, what you got in your pockets, yo?" Dolphins are tough. That's what I'm saying.
That was a quite a vignette there.
Look, you know, I'm from Brownsville. I've been robbed. So a lot of those conversations start that way. Hey, yo, you know where you at? Hey, you got the time?
Why is that the question?
Because one, it sets up, you know where you at tells you that you're in the wrong neighborhood.
Okay.
Doesn't happen when you're home or near family. Okay. Usually having the time is, it was like a 90s thing, but like if you had a watch on somebody asked you a time when you pulled your watch out, you had to take your eyes off of them, and when you did return your eyes back to them, the situation was completely different than when it started. You know, just ways of dividing your attention before you were relieved of your things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then also just setting up the domination thing of like asking a bunch of questions. As you do this, you're also surrounding this person and kind of sequestering them from the rest of, you know, society or passersby that would help, which is a really funny thing to think of happening in New York City of all places. But, you know, it's not always lousy with people, especially if you're in your residential parts at the times when kids get out of school. Ain't nobody out there. But anyway.
Dolphins have clits.
Dolphins be sexing on each other for fun and profit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a number of species that fuck for profit. There's definitely like penguins that trick for stones and stuff.
They steal each other's babies, put stones in place.
Well, that's another thing. Oh. But like, yeah, stones are apparently a part of like the way that they build the nest, and then some female penguins will basically like trick for pebbles. Males will bring them pebbles, and then,
that's nice.
Yeah, you know, you get your pebbles how you get them.
Yeah, I can't remember what I might have been at the Museum of Sex in New York. I can't remember, but they talked about a particular branch of simian that they really were like they would give each other orgasms so that they would do things for each other. Like it was very much a currency.
Bonobos, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Bonobos are notably like they've basically replaced war with sex, so it's like how they greet.
Nice. I feel like that's how human beings were before too.
I mean, it like when there weren't as many people, I think that was probably a much more realistic solution. Now I don't think we can do it as a greeting.
True.
Just, I mean, we got other stuff we got to do.
Just too many people outside. I don't know everybody. I don't even speak to my neighbors, dog. I can't be doing that. You know how many people live in Baltimore, Sam?
It's like not enough hours in the day. So, gotta winnow it down. We were talking about before we started recording, like when we discuss animal sex, right? And there's these assumptions that like everything sort of reproduces using the same path, but it's not. And even if they're mammals, it's different, right? So we were talking about like fucking like rabbits as a term that people use, but what that's related to, my understanding, I am not a rabbit expert, but my understanding is the way that they are primed is that if you're trying to breed them, they only ovulate, you know, for a certain amount of time. Also, like everything else does, that ovulates. And they require like multiple acts of coitus in a row in order to be able to get pregnant. So like if humans have one act of coitus and a sperm can get to an ovum, you can end up pregnant. Like that's how that works. But mm-hmm. like with rabbits, my understanding is they have to have multiple bouts of coitus that are usually pretty quick. In hey succession. Now. Yeah. They're like, go.
Can't be quick enough for Daryl Charles. Hey, look, I got things to do. Like I said, I'm busy.
So they have like several bouts in a row in succession in order to be able to like make sure that they get pregnant. And it's just different animals do things differently because we've, you know, evolved for different circumstances. So I think with rabbits, since they're like preyed upon so much, probably mm-hmm. can't stay in an active coitus for like 6-7 minutes, you know?
Right.
Like yeah. they would get killed.
Yeah, you gotta hurry up and get that because these foxes is out here, dog.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, you would definitely die.
Right. Can't be out here just sucking dick. Nah. Hey, look. We gotta get back underground because there's a lot of things out here who could kill us. And yeah, like, it was a great conversation that we had before we hit record because it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, a lot of humans, we try to extract ourselves from the animal kingdom like we aren't animals and we did not evolve certain traits similarly, right? Mm. And so we put a lot of, we anthropomorphize rabbits when you say you fucking like rabbits, right? When there's a different reason for it. And I can't remember who it was. Ooh, I think I do remember. It was like a bouncer at a comedy club. Anyway, talking about homosexuality. And he was saying, like, I don't get that. That's just not natural. And I was like, do you know that a variety of mammals engage in homosexual activity? Do you think it's not natural if a dog decides to suck a dog's dick? Do you think they know what gender means or what homosexuality is? Do you think that they think about that? Like, they go off of what they feel inside and they act on it, right? They work off of instinct. So if we could find animals in the wild, and obviously because I'm Daryl Charles, I slowed everything down and I pulled my phone out and I just started showing them bats jerking each other off. I showed them video of two male bats sucking each other off. Like, you know, the things that, because I've been hosting a sex ed comedy game show for years, you know, and was actually able to turn this person around as far as their, at least they didn't say it to me ever again, that like homosexuality was weird. Because I was like, these animals are, our animal kingdom is full of heterosexual acts and homosexual acts. And you can't tell me that there's a bat somewhere upset because there's a little Nas X bat chilling, making songs. They're not sitting there just with pervasive thoughts, just living their life, doing their thing, and all of a sudden just have to say, I don't like that gay stuff. Like, no. No. Which, to that, I always say, like, why? We always, yeah, when it comes to that stuff, it's like, why do you have pervasive homosexual thoughts? Why were you just living your life, and all of a sudden the idea of a dick in the mouth just came, and you were upset? I think you need to investigate those feelings, buddy. Mm. I feel like you got a rise out of it, and you, your anger is to that rise, not to the act. Yeah. So, you know, live your life, Lil Boozy.
Yeah. But I think, like, a lot of our reactions are because we see someone doing something that we would never have allowed ourselves. And that's not to say that someone necessarily that is closeted.
Right.
But just, like, the idea of, like, do you know how many feelings I have shut down?
Yep.
And you just get to go out there and do whatever you want? Do you know how many instincts I have just had to, like, stifle?
Yep.
How very dare you not stifle your instincts? I think that's a lot of it.
Oh, man. Okay. Real quick. Talking to this comedian dude, and we were talking about movies or whatever, and we were talking about comic book movies, and so we were talking about Watchmen, and this person said, oh, I couldn't watch that movie. And I was like, oh, was it boring? He was like, nah, it was too many dicks in it. And I was like, what do you mean it's too many dicks? He was like, it was too many dicks in the movie, I ain't like that, I left. And I was like, you walked out of the movie? He was like, yeah. I was like, you're talking about the cartoon blue dicks that showed up in the beginning of the movie? He's like, yeah. I was like, so you went to a 3-hour thing. The movie was supposed to be about 3 hours. You had 3 hours of your time slotted. And you saw cartoon blue penises. And you left? He was like, yeah, man, it's just too many dicks. I ain't on that shit. I was like, do you know I have a penis? Do you know there's a dick on me right now? He was like, man, stop talking like that. I was like, what do you mean stop talking like that? I have a penis. It's swinging right now. I have one. You have one too, but I don't want to blow your mind, but I have a penis. Also, you see those dudes over there? It's penises. Stop talking like that. What's wrong with penises? Yeah. They're body parts, buddy. I don't want to blow your mind, but every man you've spoken to probably had a penis. Yikes.
And a butthole, likely. Most Yikes. People have buttholes.
Yikes. The idea that, like, yeah, there are genitals under my clothes blows your mind. I think you have you might like penises more than you're letting off.
Or just feels deeply uncomfortable around bodies in general.
That's also true. Or the sadder part, the sadder thing would be like you don't like your own penis for some reason, and therefore all references to it make you think about that thing you don't like. And I'm telling you, your penis is cool, man.
There's a lot of insecurity that's like built in around it. Like there's so many messages that like your value is determined by the features of it that you can't control.
True.
You know, it's fraught with all of these weird social stories that, like, you know, from the jump. But
too many dicks.
Too many dicks on the dance floor. That's all right, the kind of friend I am. Yeah, and that sad story is a great segue to our next piece of fucking news. So our next example of fucking news, this one, fucking wow, just found this one today, but Japan has appointed a minister of loneliness, because while suicide rates had been going down for a long time, they jumped up for the first time in 11 years, especially among women, and in 2020, more people died by suicide than died by COVID.
As of October 2020, more people died in October 2020 of suicide than had died in 2020
total
from COVID.
Yes, which is, yes,
that's a hell of a stat.
Yes,
31 days, y'all lost more people.
Yes, that's a very good point of clarification. Yeah, yeah, 1 month. Yeah, I don't know what exactly they're going to be doing, but they're going to be trying to deal with Japan's declining birth rates, you know, trying to deal with this as a public health issue. I don't know what your answer to this is going to be, but
they're trying to look at the cultural implications of this, right? They're saying more and more single women are living alone in Japan. You know, probably the wonderful benefits of capitalism have led to a lot of lonely living and a lot of hard work with not a lot of play. Mm. And, you know, especially play that would bond you to your fellow human. And so it's seeming like, suicide's on the rise. In addition to, not having kids is on the rise. But, you know, in Japan, that's... anyway...
So there's been a few like different creative solutions that are mentioned. This is an insider.com article, but there was a robot that was designed to hold someone's hand when they're lonely, and then there are people that are charging basically just like to hang out and keep someone company. So these are some solutions that folks are coming up with, but it's just so complicated because, like you were saying, like the reason that more people are living in isolation is actually based on a positive thing, which is that you now can. You can live independently on your own. So, like, you don't have to live under, like, the scrutiny and the rules of your nuclear family. You don't have to get married to survive. Like, if you are a person who is disabled, it is more possible to live alone now than it was in the past. Like, if you want independence, it is now possible. But then the downside is when something goes down like the lockdown, people living alone may well not see anyone in person.
Yeah.
And
I realize that
like, is weird.
Getting like my corporate job way back when, I realized that like as a grown man, like I was like 24, 25 or whatever. I can't remember. It was like a week of my life. I was like, I don't think I've touched a human being this week. Like, I have not had physical contact with another person because I've been driving to work. I've been in my cubicle. I've had nothing but above the board conversations with people. And, you know, in all of the purchases that I've made and the places that I've been, I haven't touched anybody. And that, you know, what did I do when I figured that out? I called a friend and then I hung out with them. And I was probably far too close to them and too affectionate. But, you know, I fixed that for myself. But what it did shine a light on is that, yeah, like loneliness is definitely a feature of modern living.
Mm-hmm.
And
we've talked about before about the gendered nature of this, that it's much more encouraged for women to be like physically affectionate.
In America. In other countries, the culture is that, you know, men hold hands and, you know, look at the Cuomos, right? They just like touching each other because it's affection. It's not creepy unless the person who you are being affectionate with thinks it's creepy, in which case, yeah, it's probably fucking creepy. But, you know, the thing is, I kiss people on the cheek.
Yeah, so consent.
Consent is incredibly important when it comes to touching people and social interactions, yes. Uh-huh. But, you know, maybe be more willing to hug your friend the next time you see him. Not because you feel bad and like trying to guess that, oh yeah, I know a guy who nobody touches. I'm not saying to do that. Just on the overall, be the change you want to see in the world. You can make the world a better place by hugging someone. I'll tell you that with comedians, we hug each other all the fucking time. And it's probably because we're very lonely.
And I think there's also like camaraderie that comes from knowing the very specific type of
definitely
battles and challenges that the other people around you are facing. You know, not everything can be war, but like you can understand each other through the bonds of like having survived something together.
Oh yeah, there's definitely trauma bonding when it comes to open mic comedy. The hell, paid comedy, fucking, there's a lot of trauma bonding that happens. But yeah, you know, in the communities that you find yourself, see if you can add a little joy to someone by having a tactile relationship with a human being. It's also a very good trick if you're trying to date and you want to avoid the platonic nature of some friendships, to initiate physical offers early on in the relationship to set those boundaries to not be very far from each other. Make your intentions known that you want this relationship to be physical.
I like the way, so Vanka is someone we definitely need to have on the show at some point. New York-based like adult content performer, sexuality educator, like all around delightful human. And she gave a Do Both talk at Get You Babe, We Can Do Both, that was about like how to flirt in a way that is and it was like it's a foolproof way that's also like gender neutral, and it's especially like a lot of femmes have a hard time being clear that they're trying to flirt without being aggressive. They don't want to come on in the way that like some, you know, sort of random dudes have been to them. So basically she like discussed like going up and just stating directly like, I find you very attractive and I would be definitely interested in pursuing this from a more romantic or sexual place. Here's how you can get a hold of me. I'm gonna go over there. Which is like, so you don't have to, they don't have to like make a decision in the moment. You've stated what you wanted. They can follow up if they want to or not. And not just so nobody feels weird.
Yeah. So, you know, it's good.
I think that's just like great in general. Like even aside from flirting, like if you want to be friends with somebody, it is hard to approach someone for friendship too.
Especially as an adult. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like if somebody could just be brave enough to go up and be like, guess what? I want to be your friend. Do you want to go do stuff together? You know, like, I want to go to this thing. Do you want to go with me? I like you. I think you're fun. I want to be friends with you.
To quote Chris Rock, I like baseball. Do you like baseball? That joke was about being set up by your wife to be friends with a grown man. But yeah, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of our culture, we give kids the opportunity to be friends by rote, right? We throw them with a brand new set of people every 10 months.
Yeah.
You know, like when you put them in any kind of education, they are then siloed into different bins based on probably the probability that they'll be a successful human being. But they keep getting put around new people. Then once you get out of school, you get a job, then you're only around your job people. And I definitely noticed that there were some people who like lived for work, so that they wanted to be in the, you know, after work teams, the inner league betting things, all the stuff. But these were just ways to be around more people and give people opportunities to do stuff. And yeah, as an adult, it's very, very tough. Like, you know, especially like as a person who went to college, like once you hit like 24, 25, people tend to live in the city they went to school in, because that's where they have a fucking life. That's where they have friends. That's where they know people. And to move back to the town you left when you were 17 or 18 can be daunting, because all you'd have is family, and the people that, you know, you knew back then probably have moved or lived their own lives. So, you know, loneliness is a feature of our world at this point, and, you know, we should all be trying to mitigate that as best as we can.
And what I think one of the things that we can do is not only be seeking out friends for ourselves, but like, I have so many distinct memories of like the kid that I have always been, like the very specific, you know, like kind of human that I am, is I'm not necessarily great at like maintaining contact with friends for a long, like I stay friends with people for years and years and years, but I'm not necessarily the best at like texting all the time, sure, or calling or whatever, but right, I stay friends with people for a long time. Yeah. And I'm also, what I am good at is that like if it's the first day of school and there's a new kid, or it's the foreign exchange student, or like fucking whatever, somebody doesn't know anybody, I love to go over and be like, hey, and this is where everything is, and this is who these people are, and this is how you can get to that place. I am still friends to this day with someone that I met at a random retreat, because he like his flight was delayed, and so he came in a full day after everybody else. Everybody else had a chance to like acclimate and meet each other and be a part of these like intro activities, and so he shows up the next day. And so I'm just like, you know, I'm that character in the teenage movie where it's like, this is the hot nerds.
Sure.
And this is like
exposition lady.
Yeah, I'm that guy. So even if we don't hang out all the time after that, I'm going to introduce you to the groups and tell you what y'all have in common.
Right.
So you can connect. And I'm going to take you to places where you may or may not like it and then want to go back on your own later.
Sure.
And I think that everybody can find where they fit into that sort of practice.
Mm-hmm.
To like help new people acclimate and not just always be, you know, waiting for other people to come over to them. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Be a facilitator if you can't be everybody's friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we can help loneliness. Let's stop the war on terror and start the war on loneliness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that time-wise takes us to our final segment.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Oh yeah,
so
this is
we have,
because it's quick.
Yeah, this is a good one to end on. Yeah. So this is a fucking brilliant. We're gonna just have a nice day. We're not gonna have a fucking idiot, just a fucking brilliant.
Yeah, sometimes it's just not worth it to go find idiots, you know?
Yeah. And well, I guess this sort of implies that there are idiots, but despite that, this is about a script supervisor at Pixar. Her name is Jessica Haight, and she was reviewing the script for Cars 3, which is apparently a thing, and discovered that 90% of the characters and the lines spoken by characters were male, which is also interesting since they're cars. But
yeah.
So she makes the writers and directors aware of this, and even though they're in the middle of production, she made her point, and they worked together. And they changed the gender of three characters, which resulted in a final script that was only 75% male.
And 25% female. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she went to somebody in the tech department and worked on developing a program that like counts the characters and lines by gender. So now that can be incorporated into Pixar software. So going forward, that'll get better. And so since then, the average has gone from 75% male to average 60 to 65% male. And then when Soul came out, it was like about 50-50. And so hopefully it will be getting better and better, and also including other genders. So
all genders.
Yeah.
Quote. Yeah. Yeah. Which is good. It's just another, you know, and it's actually kind of funny. I remember this happening in the comedy community, and a lot of people rolling their eyes because someone was like, hey, you know, when it comes to these show lineups, it's heavily skewed in one particular way. Here's a tip. How about you just keep a spreadsheet of who you got? And people say, I'm not keeping a goddamn spreadsheet. But, like, there's no way to fucking keep track otherwise. And if you don't want to keep track, just say that out loud. Don't decry the person who gave you a solution.
Yeah.
A lot of people love to be like, that solution sucks, so there's no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, here was the problem. The world's actually more women than men, you know. It's like 51-49 or like 52-48 or some shit like that. There are actually more women on the planet.
Yeah.
So it kind of doesn't make sense that in a apocalyptic future where humans are gone, but the cars are human beings, or the cars are anthropomorphized in some way, that they'd be 90% men. It just doesn't make any fucking sense. This is
an ongoing problem in the film industry, because mm-hmm. like, even despite all of the discussion about this, it still continues to be overwhelmingly not only male in the characters, but like behind the camera, mm-hmm. writers, directors, cinematographers especially,
yep.
likely to be male. The Gina Davis Institute has been just doing a lot of work at like just making those numbers known. And in one really positive case, this was a really heartwarming thing for me personally, because a lot of the stuff that I like is, you know, like heist movies and like the kind of stuff. It's like 95% men, and then there'll be like a stripper and a wife, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I hate that that's how they always have to be. But anyway, so they found that of all of the TV networks, the worst was FX in terms of gender and racial diversity in their characters. And so they took this hard data and just literally like, here's how many characters there are and here's their genders, blah, 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 and took it to the head of FX, who is a white guy, who was like, man, I considered myself pretty enlightened, did not realize we were doing this, and committed to changing things up. And since then, like, dramatically improved it. And now FX has much better stuff. I mean, like, sure. Why the Last Man is a show that has literally a guy.
But he's, you know, gotta, like, be the one on the fucking billboards. God damn it.
But yeah, they've done a much better job because they saw the data and were like, yeah, we don't want to be that. You know?
That's the thing. When you have the power to add some parody, when you have the power to do good, and you don't, just know that I'm looking at you and shaking my head.
Yeah. It's also like, there's this expectation that it's like, financial reasons is why they make this. But time and time again, especially in the last 10 years, the women-centric movies are actually really fucking financially successful. Bridesmaids was like, blew everything else out of the water the year it came out. And there's just like a bunch of things like that. But they keep treating it like a fluke.
I also have to hate that part. I see these conversations happen all the time around inclusivity, and they're like, yeah, because we're leaving money on the table when we don't be inclusive. It's like, hey, how about you just don't be evil, dog? Why does it have to be tied to dough? Like, people go see movies. The thing about something like Cars and the way Pixar is set up, kids are going to go see those movies. Parents are going to take their children to go see it. The parent is the one that is behind the money behind that thing, and they're just going to make sure that their kids are doing something so they don't have to sit there and watch them for 2 fucking hours. Pixar is in a position where they can add these things. Like, they are the gatekeepers to this sort of stuff. And if they're just making up shit, right, they're making up a world where the toys talk, you can make sure that the toys aren't all fucking white cowboys, You can do that. There's nothing wrong with it. And it's not some... there's always going to be a random person that goes, well, look at all this shit. They're just doing this to cater to the whoever's. But, you know, shout out to Pixar and shout out to Jessica for saying, fuck that guy.
Yeah. So, congratulations to her and to everybody else who, you know, drives these conversations wherever you are in industry
and,
you're in.
And you can be the change you want to see in the world. It's very easy. Or it may not be very easy, but it damn sure ain't hard. It's not hard to do better, you know, a little bit better every day. Yeah. And, you know, keep in mind the people who you see that don't want to be better. And ask yourself, do you want to help those people with your time and attention?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have to, in my life, I have to sit and say that to myself. And thankfully, I can still look myself in the mirror because I say to myself, no, I really don't help those people out willy-nilly.
I love it. Yeah. So congratulations to her on her successes of doing that and to everybody else who does not get an article written about them.
Yeah. She found herself in a position where she could make an effective change, and she did. And thankfully, she worked for a company that saw that and did something with it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our planned stuff. So I guess my next question is, Daryl, where can people find out more about you, and where can they buy your album, Black Gentrifier?
Oh boy, you can go to darylcomedy.com to find things about me and stuff, my dates, my album Black Gentrifier, my links to this podcast, you know, read my bio, why not? It's gonna change soon. Check my calendar, there's gonna be a bunch of dates. I'm gonna be in Philly a lot in the end of January, so you know, stay tuned.
Including, I believe, Flirt Vonnegut's Fantasy Basement.
That's very true. I will be there for Flirt Vonnegut's Fantasy Basement, talking about Marvel comics.
That, I think, is the 26th of January.
I believe
so. Frankie Brandley's. And we are going to have both an in-person and a virtual component. So if you can't be in Philly, you can still join us by getting a virtual ticket. And that's at frankiebradleys.com. You can buy your ticket and then join us on the Zoom. And then you can
it's going to be a good time, and I'll be there. So, you know, be the change. I don't know. Dr. Timmery, where can people find out about you and your many endeavors?
You can go to my website, which is drtimaree. So that's drtimmery.com. And you can find links to the stories we discussed today, to other news, things related to sexuality, to my latest articles that I've written for the Philly Weekly and for other publications. You can find my upcoming events, including I will also be at Fleur Vonnegut's Fantasy Basement. I will also be at a number of other shows. We have a fun one coming up for Valentine's weekend, so that Friday before we do a DTF in person, we need to find out more information to give you on that, but I will be doing a show in Frankie Bradley's that is a mixture of live music and burlesque, combining forces with V. Shane Frederick, who's a Philly musician, and it'll be super cool and romantic, and you can get a fancy dinner and some specialty cocktails and then check out some hot babes.
Nice.
And it'll be a nice Valentine's weekend.
We're doing stuff. Tell us about the stuff you want to do. Email us at our respective social media places. You got questions for us, ask them. You know, get at us. We have a Facebook page if you still use that. I don't. But yeah, we got a Facebook page. Please follow that. Follow Timmery.
We tweeted
on
each other.
The internet. On Insta, you Timberlingling. On the Twitter, you're Timmery_Lee. There you go. I'm Daryl underscore Daryl on both of those things. So we'll see you on the tubes.
Yeah. So thank you to our editor and producer, Flirt Vonnegut.
Yes. Thank you and happy birthday.
Yes, yes, who just recently suffered a birthday. And thank you all of you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show for 7.5, nearly 8 years at this point. And yeah, we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.